Mrs. Spear has moved into your home and you're out now, and we want to hear all about what has happened to you from that time on in terms of your career.
Well, I stayed with Health and Welfare Planning Association to work on something called the R&D Project. It was following the civil disturbances in the 60s, the community of Allegheny County was trying to see why were people unhappy, why were these civil disturbances, you know, it followed the assassination of Martin Luther King. And the study was to look at four areas of communal life, and health was one of them. So I staffed the Health Task Force of the Reappraisal and Development Commission. And one of the things that came out of the Health Task Force was the notion that people, now remember this is in the late 60s, and I think the report finally came out in 73, it was a two-year study, so I went to work in 71. The report came out in 73. And what it said was that that Pittsburgh really was very favored. It only had one medical school, which was seen as a plus. There wasn't that competition. It had excellent community hospitals. It didn't have a public hospital so that people got access to equal care. But that people were not well informed about their health, and that there was a lack of cooperation within the healthcare community, so there was a need for some kind of a coordinating mechanism to help people learn what resources were available and to help them learn what the new technologies were and how they could better take care of themselves. And at that time, the work that was being done in California and at UCLA on the influence of behavior on people's health was just the scientific base for that was just coming out. You know, people were just starting to realize in the early 70s, although the Surgeon General's report had been out since 1963, that smoking wasn't good for your health, and that exercise was good for your health, and that diet was critical, and so on and so forth. So we identified a number of recommendations to improve the health of the citizens of Allegheny County, and one of them was that people would be better educated about their health. So I thought that was a great idea and said, okay, why didn't somebody do this? And the person who chaired the task force was the vice chairman of Alcoa, a man by the name of John Mitchell. And I was the staff person to him. And he was the lay, you know, volunteer on it. And so he thought that we should write a plan for educating the community about health, which we did. And then there was this issue. By that time, there was a national committee. Nixon was president, and he appointed, at the recommendation of his vice president, Nelson Rockefeller, a national committee on health education. And so this whole movement of educating the public with health was getting national notoriety. The chairman of that national committee was a man by the name of John Wilson, who was the president of Xerox Corporation. Oh, John Wilson,
good man.
You know, but he passed away in the process of this committee working. And his vice chairman happened to be a Pittsburgher, and the Pittsburgher's name was R. Heath Larry, who was the vice chairman of U.S. Steel. And so R. Heath Larry became the chairman of the President's Committee on Health Education. And at that time, I was working on this fledgling health education center for Pittsburgh, and we were trying to get it off the ground. And I knew people around the country who were working in the same field. And since Heath Larry was a Pittsburgher, they decided they had to have one of the hearings of the President's Committee on Health Education in Pittsburgh. So we held this hearing on health education. Now, mind you, I had a degree in public health, but I had never taken a course in health education. I didn't realize it was a profession of its own, that there were master's level and doctor level people in it. But they said you have to have people come to the hearing. I think this is an interesting aside, because they said, what is a health educator? Who are the people you get? And they say, well, health educators are people who help people fulfill their highest potential. And I said, well, that's Fred Rogers. So I said, Fred Rogers must be a health educator. Of course, he didn't think himself as a health educator. But anyway, we had Fred Rogers at our hearing, and he picked up on it beautifully. And at that time, there was a man who was working with, also as a volunteer, whose name was Arthur Lawrence, and he was the vice president of community affairs and public relations for Blue Cross of Western Pennsylvania. And he said that he would get the Blue Cross plans around the country to pay for a video. of the work of the President's Committee on Health Education, and Fred Rogers was kind of like the centerfold for that. And that started a relationship between Fred Rogers and Blue Cross of Western Pennsylvania that continues to this day, because he's the honorary chairman of the Caring Foundation, which is an insurance program for children in all of Pennsylvania. It's an extraordinary program. Anyway, so we had the hearings, and then we got the Health Education Center started, and I became its first director as an employee of Health and Welfare Planning, and we had a board, and Heath Larry was the first chairman of our board, and then he decided we needed another chairman, and again, the Jewish thing comes in. There was a Jewish person who was on the board of the United Way who was very interested in health. He was the president of Montefiore Hospital. His name was Milton Porter. He had been involved in our planning for the Health Education Center, and he himself really believed in the notion that people can do for themselves, and that you could cut health care costs if you could get people to stop smoking and start exercising and eating right and avoid heart disease and other preventable disease and disability. He just believed that, and he was tapped to be the chairman of the Health Education Center. We became a 501c3, and I became the executive director, and that was back in 1975, I guess we incorporated.
It was a whole terrific thing.
It was brand new then.
I remember reading in the paper that they were going to try to reduce health costs by keeping people well and teaching them how to keep themselves. And you were doing it, and that is terrific.
That's what we were doing, and that's what the Health Education Center started out to do. And we were funded through the United Way, and then through grants, and through sales of services, and through various programs. And we had the first dial access telephone information service in the city. It was called TelMed, and then we included the law. And I had wonderful people working with me. Fran Cohn, who went on to become she had been the executive director of Planned Parenthood and then went on to run the foundation at St. Clair Hospital. A wonderful, wonderful woman. Mm-hmm. Frances Cohn worked with me, a woman named Carol Shifkins. A really bona fide master's level health educator, Wanda Vertaler, who had trained at Yale and had moved to Pittsburgh when her husband came here to teach at Pitt. There were just wonderful, wonderful people worked alongside of me, and we built the Health Education Center.
Is TelMed still in the...
No, Blue Cross has...
That's what I said.
Yeah, we talked because I knew that was your...
And I said that just recently I was...
I don't know if it's...
It wasn't.
It wasn't in the Blue Pages?
The last 2 weeks I wanted to look up something.
And it wasn't in the paper?
I couldn't find it.
Here, let me help Milton. Oh, I'm... Mil? Okay. Oh, it's Pat. Oh, hi. Okay. I'm just having a meeting.
Okay.
And let's see, what else?
We were talking about the telephone book. It's not in the book.
Oh, right. Well, they bought into a national service that they make available for Blue Cross subscribers.
How does the person get to it?
Well, if your Blue Cross tells you the number. If you have Blue Cross insurance, they'll tell you the number. What?
What if you don't have Blue Cross?
Well, then you could probably dial it if somebody told you the number, but I didn't realize. It's not in the telephone. It's not in the Blue Pages.
Blue Cross in 2 months?
It's not in the paper anymore?
I don't know.
I haven't looked in the new one.
You know what? Ruthie says it's not in the new telephone.
In the new telephone book.
Is not there. Tell law.
Is still there because the Bar Association
and all of the
and tell tips Business Bureau
and all of the organizations you can call for abortions mm-hmm. and this and blah blah blah, all of that was there, but TelMed was not there.
You could call for a bee sting, couldn't you?
You could call for anything.
Calling once for a bee. What to do
when
about
Lynn Williams, who became the national president of the United Steelworkers, mm-hmm. when he came to Pittsburgh and we went to the steelworkers for money, we went to everybody for money. And he said, are you the TelMed people?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when I went to Canada, they said, well, you're going to move to Pittsburgh? How come you're going to move to Pittsburgh? He said, I want to tell you about Pittsburgh. I stayed in a hotel in Pittsburgh, and they had this brochure, and we had it in all the hotel rooms, and he said, there was information about gout that was better than any information that any doctor in Canada had ever given to me, and that's only in Pittsburgh. It was so cute the way he said
that's important.
And they were supportive, and when I went to California to generate some funds from the Kaiser Family Foundation, when they heard the number of calls that we were getting, they said that if you don't feel well in Pittsburgh, it's normative behavior to go to your telephone and dial, tell them that, like your bee sting.
That's
it was
right.
Just extraordinary. By the 1980s, we were very successful in raising funds for this program,
mm-hmm.
but there was no public source of funds for educating the public for health generally. There was money for school health education, and there was money for diabetes education, or categorical, or heart disease, or
so
something.
It was kind of fragmented.
But it was fragmented, as we had identified in the R&D study, that it was
mm-hmm.
fragmented, and we tried to pull it together. But cooperation and collaboration. One of my colleagues once said, is an unnatural act in the healthcare human service field. So it was hard to get. It was always hard to generate money for ongoing operating expenses. So my job as an executive, which is most executives' jobs of not-for-profits, is to go out and raise money. And we were really quite successful at it. And the Pittsburgh community was very generous, and we were able to generate some public funds. But both Mike Porter, who stayed on as the chairman of our board, and Ernie Buckman, who was the next chairman of our board, who was a very, very wonderful citizen in Pittsburgh, and he had Oliver Realty and was a very great person. And they felt, as I did and as the board did, that we needed a steady source of operating income, and that being an independent not-for-profit with this overall kind of approach to health, which is now so accepted, but it wasn't in those days, and Blue Cross, we had this relationship with Blue Cross from the early days through Art Lawrence and Community Affairs, and Blue Cross had a new CEO who looked around and decided, oh, this idea of prevention is not a bad idea, and the more advanced, the more progressive insurance plans were looking at health education and health promotion, and he heard that there was this health education center in Pittsburgh and that we could be had, and we had some overlapping board members, and so we did affiliate with Blue Cross of Western Pennsylvania in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time we still maintained the health education center, and I continued to run it for Blue Cross until I retired in 1996.
Mm-hmm. When you retired.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, actually, did I retire in 96 or 97? When I went to Blue Cross, I went as the chief operating officer or chief executive officer of a Blue Cross affiliate, and that was the Health Education Center. So that made me an officer of Blue Cross, and Blue Cross officers are obligated to retire at the age of 65.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, this is an apocryphal story, but it's Jewish related. A man by the name of Osaroff, Abraham Osaroff, was the executive director of Montefiore Hospital, the executive director of the fledgling Hospital Association of Western Pennsylvania, and the president of Blue Cross of Western Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
He helped start all those organizations in
mm-hmm.
the third. Well, he didn't help start Montefiore, but he helped start Blue Cross and Hospital Association of Western Pennsylvania in the 30s. And he stayed on as president. And the story I heard was that he was really a very dynamic, a very interesting, very phenomenal man. I don't know where his papers are, but they should be in the Jewish archives. Anyway, he was going to be 65, and they really wanted to get rid of him, so they made this law that if you were an officer of Blue Cross, you had to retire at 65. That's what they said. I don't know if that's true or not. Anyway, I was 65 in September of 96, and I think I retired in either 96 or 97. I think I stayed on as a consultant for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But once I retired, as so often happens in the corporate world, you're out of there, and my counsel was not sought. So I really don't know very much about what goes on at HEC today. And
what
I read
do?
The paper.
I know about Tell Med, where it got into the paper, into the telephone
book.
What else did you do?
Well, we started programs. First of all, the people who are at highest risk for preventable disease and disability are people of low income.
Sure.
And that would be minority people, and in southwestern Pennsylvania, that would be African American or people of color. Mm-hmm. And we started some of the very early programs, health promotion programs, with people of color. We had a grant from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation in the middle 80s. That looked at wellness in older people, and we did a study that demonstrated that you can teach an old dog new tricks, the Healthy Older Persons study, and it showed that older people, even up to their late 80s, would make changes if they were taught how to make changes. We had people exercising. I mean, things that people know now in the 90s, they didn't know that in the 80s, and we were able to demonstrate that they could do that. Mm-hmm. We started programs in the school. We were the consultants to the Pittsburgh Board of Education, and at one time there were 23 school-based wellness centers that were financed by community hospitals where the students could come at no cost to the family to get the care of pediatricians, social workers.
The uninsured could come and get
anybody could come and get it, insured, uninsured. That program has kind of changed its nature. The Health Education Center was instrumental in doing what we called community-based health education. What we did was to demonstrate that if a community, if you organized a community around a particular issue and reinforce them with accurate information and with support, that people would stop smoking, that they would increase exercise. We started out of the Healthy Older Persons program with Kellogg Funds, the Health Place system, which started out being a center for health promotion for older people. But then when we affiliated with Blue Cross, we opened up Health Place centers that were affiliated with hospitals and with primary care. And the Health Place system is now an integral part of Blue Cross of Western Pennsylvania. So all Blue Cross subscribers all over Western Pennsylvania have access to Health Place centers. I don't know if you've ever seen one. There's one in Monroeville.
Wasn't there one on Forbes Street?
There was one on Forbes Street that was associated with Montefiore Hospital at the time.
Where
Isley's used to be, right. And those centers, the Health Place centers now, I know because I've read about it, they sponsor the Dean Ornish program for people who are at risk for cardiac disease. Mm-hmm. They sponsor a lot of preventive programs. So a lot of the prevention things that we started at the Health Education Center are now part of Blue Cross through the Health Place system. Mm-hmm. And the Health Education Center still exists, and it still is a not-for-profit affiliate of Blue Cross, and it does a number of programs. We started a program called Partnership in Prevention with people in public housing communities, and these women were able to, they're mostly women, and they were often single mothers and often had addicted or had been part of the criminal justice system. We saw dramatic turnarounds in their behavior. These women went to school, got jobs. I mean, I got a call just a couple weeks ago from a woman named Joyce Murray, and she wanted to know how I was doing, and she wanted to wish me happy Passover. And, just to tell me that she was at school and she had gotten a house at Crawford Center. And her father was living with her and her family, and her daughter was going to college, and she herself was going to Carlo.
That's a success story of the first water.
Yeah, it's really dramatic. And it was very exciting. I worked very hard, very long hours, and a very patient husband. By the time my kids were out, I devoted a lot of time and energy to it. I did make a mistake. I don't regret anything except one thing, which I keep thinking I'm going to do something about, but I don't know if I will or not. And that was, we didn't write up and publish enough of the after we affiliated. I might, who knows?
Yeah,
I have a lot of the data. We started a program called the Partnership in Prevention of Youth Violence, were Blue Cross funded. Blue Cross is extremely generous and extremely supportive of the whole concept. Anyway, Mike Porter stayed on as the chairman of the board, and then when the Montefiore was sold and the Jewish Healthcare Foundation was started, I do believe that Mike Porter was very instrumental in setting an agenda for the Jewish Healthcare Foundation that had public health as its underpinnings. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of public health is prevention.
Mm-hmm.
So that a lot of the work of the Jewish Healthcare Foundation is in the area of prevention.
From
it was related to Mike, mm-hmm. and so on. But it was happening all around the country at that time. We just started very early.
It was here in Pittsburgh. It was really wonderfully admirable, I thought. I thought you did a terrific job.
Well, I was happy doing it. When your vocation is your avocation.
You didn't know that I was admiring you, but I was.
Oh, thank you.
And do.
Thank you.
Okay, since you retired, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about you?
Well, since I retired, I was originally hired as a planner, so I helped Ladies Hospital Aid. I got back to Ladies Hospital Aid, which I hadn't done anything for 30 years, and they were going through a strategic planning process, so I did help them do that. And I did join. You wanted to know about when we were married. My husband knew that I'd come from this traditional background, and we decided to keep kosher and maintain a kosher home. When we moved to Boston, we learned about things like lobster and things that we had never eaten before. And I had always felt that you shouldn't confuse kids about things. You shouldn't do one thing in your home. And I had friends who ate bacon out, but they couldn't have bacon in their house. And I thought that was a very strange way to eat. So we were going to have children, and we were going to eat lobster. So we then decided that we would not keep a kosher home, and that we would not, we would not affiliate with an Orthodox congregation. We moved back to Pittsburgh. We joined B'nai Israel. It was convenient. It was close to us. All our kids were confirmed there, and bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah there. And I was, for a short while on the board there, and so on and so forth. When B'nai, and in our home, we do observe the Sabbath, and we have holidays, and mm-hmm. our kids still remember, observing the holidays and that sort of thing. But when B'nai Israel closed, we lived in Shadyside, and I lost my vision. I want a spiritual home. I want to be affiliated. So we did join Rodef Shalom at congregation. And Walter and Irene Jacobs, we'd known them since they moved to Pittsburgh. They were friends of the Aarons, and that's mm-hmm. how we got to know them. And so I've always been friendly with them, and we have lots of friends there, and I can walk to Temple, and so now I'm on their strategic planning group and working there, doing that. And then I got very interested in the gardening, and I still was consulting with Blue Cross on the partnership in prevention of youth violence. And when Milton Porter, who was the first founding chairman of the mm-hmm. Health Education mm-hmm. Center, 1 year as a fundraising gimmick, we established something called the Porter Prize for Excellence in the Promotion of Health, and it was a prize that was given to a national figure, and that person would come to Pittsburgh, and they would get a beautiful silver bowl that the Porters would buy, mm-hmm. and they would give a talk, and we would get a big audience who would pay money to come and hear mm-hmm. this person speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Mr. Porter died, when Mike Porter died, he left money in the Adrian and Milton Porter Family Foundation to continue the Porter Prize, only to give it a national the person was national figure, but they came to Pittsburgh, and so I was asked to administer the Porter Prize, so I'm still administering Porter Prize. And last year it was given to a physician out of UCLA who had done one of the first scientific studies to establish the relationship between behavior and illness, and his name is Lester Breslow, and he came to Pittsburgh and received the prize. And the family, the nephew is Lee Foster and Isabel mm-hmm. Foster, mm-hmm. and Jay Foster and their parents, Betty Foster, who live in Florida, and then Penny Foster Alpern and her husband Charles Alpern. Anyway, he came to Pittsburgh and he spoke at Carnegie Institute. It was just last November, I guess. It was last November. And it will be given again in the year 2000. It's a $20,000 prize, and there will be a lot of...
I'd like to be here to see who gets it.
Yeah, well, they will start... The committee that chooses it is they're nationally well-known people, and they'll start this summer, actually. They'll start... Excuse me just a second.
Yeah. Or can you hold it, maybe?
Just hold it.
Yeah.
Maybe hold it, because we have just a few minutes.
And since I did the vision thing, I learned I have a computer that talks to me.
Do you have voice activated?
Well, it's not voice activated. Yeah. It has a voice program in it. So it only talks what's on the computer. If you have something in print, it reads it to me.
I see.
And so I have been making notes, and I would like to write up some of the things, particularly some of the early studies. And and we are going to publish Dr. Breslow's paper. Uh-huh. What happened, which I didn't really think I would be affected this way, but the Porter Prize was given on November 9th, and my mother died on November 29th, uh-huh. and it's taken me quite a few months to get myself together.
I know.
For some reason. Oh, I guess that's natural. I guess that it does take its time to do that.
I always ask one final question. If you had your life to live over, is there anything you would do differently?
Oh, absolutely not. I have a wonderful life.
Oh, isn't that great?
I've been very blessed. Do people want to do something different?
Some do, some don't. Often people say they wish they had spent more time with their families or their children.
Well, that's sad.
It is sad.
Well, we've been very lucky. We've had good health. That's a great blessing, and a very strong support system, big family, and I spend time with my children. We take family vacations. Are we still on, or is this going to put this down?
Yeah, we're still going.
Oh, one of the things that we did, we were very lucky in our very early years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In our very early years, I decided we had to do this estate plan, because I read someplace that you should do this. I guess we were in our 40s. Early 40s, and so we brought a person in who was called an estate planner. They were really an insurance salesman, and they asked Milt, well, what are our life goals? And we didn't know what our life goals were. We wanted to raise 3 healthy kids. They all should go to college. So he started writing these things down, and he said, well, what would you like to retire? Mm-hmm. So Milt said, sure, I'd like to retire. He said, well, when would you like to retire? He said, well, I might want to retire when I'm 50 or 55. So he said, well, if you want to retire when you're 50 or 55, then and you want to send 3 children to college? And he said, yes. And Milton said, the graduate school of their choice was out there. All go to medical school. And we would like to see our children through college. We didn't feel they should have a lot of debt and stuff. And so we'd like to do that. And we'd like to take trips, because we like to travel. And at that time, we had the big house on Hampton Street. And I said, I'd like to have a smaller house. Mm-hmm. And that would be easier to take care of. And so he asked us a few questions like that. He said, okay, this is how much money you have to sock away starting tomorrow if you want to retire at the age of 55. And do all that. So we believed him, and we were able to do that. I mean, we just put money away before we did anything else. So we never really lived up to our income. We've been very fortunate. We certainly, made good income. But we did... you did put the money away. Of course, Milt didn't retire at the age of 55, but that puts you in a very, when you don't live up to your incomes, you put yourself in an advantageous position for your older years. And one of the things that we wanted to do, we did see all our kids through graduate school. Only one of them went to medical school. And one of the things we wanted to do was be able to take a trip with our family. So we took our first big family trip in 95.
Mm-hmm.
And we rented a great big house in Ireland. They called it a castle. It was a house. And we all went to Ireland.
Oh, Lois. Wonderful.
And then last year we all went to Italy. And we also rented a great big house in Italy. And we take these big family trips.
That's wonderful. And we go somewhere and stay.
We go somewhere and we stay, and then we rent a car or a bus. We rent a mini bus, and the kids are working on. Everybody has to agree, and everybody has to be there at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it takes a couple years to pull it together.
Yeah, sure.
But that's a wonderful thing.
Oh,
our kids are very responsive. We've just been very lucky and very happy.
I'm going to knock wood.
Knock wood. Yeah, poo-poo-poo, my mother would say.
Right.
But I wouldn't. No, I don't. I can't think of anything
that's terrific
that I would do differently.
Okay, and thank you so much. This has been terrific.
But you let me talk about me. So what's